From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 12th day of August 2009, Crop Production Report Day. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. And then later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Matt Blaisdell of the Anderson's Climbers Facility in Delphi, Indiana. USDA's report this morning showed corn production should be up 5% from 2008 for this season. Soybean production up 8% from last year. Cotton production up 3% from last year. And all wheat production up 3% from the July forecast. U of I's Darrell Good will take us through all those numbers in detail later in the program. And then we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City as we close out this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby September wheat futures up a nickel at 490 and a quarter, December at 517 and three quarters, five and a quarter higher. And the March at 537, up 5 and a quarter. September corn, 330 and 3 quarters, up 4 and a quarter. December at 336 and a quarter, 4 and a quarter higher. And the March at 350, up 5 and a half. May futures, 359 and a quarter, up 5 and 3 quarters. And July, $3.67, 5 and a half cents higher. August soybean futures, $12.16, down a half. September down a nickel at 1092 and one half. And November futures, up 5 and a half cents. 5 and a half higher at $10.44 for the harvest month beans. January futures 10.48 up 6. The March up a nickel at 10.44 and May contract at 10.32 and a half, up 5 and a half cents. August bean meal at 3.88 up $4.80. September bean meal at 3.40.50 down 3.20. August bean oil at 38.47 up 45 and September futures there at 38.58 up 42. August live cattle futures $1.12 and a half higher at 84.42 and a half. The October at 88.35 up 67 and a half. August feeders at 99.85 down 25 cents, 5 cents higher for the SEPs at $100.02 and a half, and the August lean hogs at 47.75 down 42 and a half. October at 43.97 and a half, 37 and a half cents lower. You are listening to the Closing Market Report from the U of I.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers as they were released this morning from USDA from the Crop Production and WASD, or World Agricultural and Supply Demand Estimates. A combined set of summaries, corn production is forecast now at 12.8 billion bushels. That's up 5% from last year, but 2% lower than the 2007 crop. Based on conditions, as of the first day of August, yields expected to average 159.5 bushels per acre for corn. That's up 5.6 bushels from last year. If realized, this would be the second highest yield on record behind 2004, and production would be the second largest behind 2007. Feed and residual use has raised 100 million bushels, with the higher yield and production expected to add to, well, what they call residual losses. Food, seed, and industrial use has raised 100 million bushels, with the higher expected use for ethanol supported by favorable ethanol producer returns. Exports are projected at 150 million bushels higher for corn. Ending stocks ought to be roughly the same as this year at 1.6 billion bushels, which is interesting because the season's average cash price for, well, the last year's crop price was $4.20 a bushel. The one yet to be harvested, or one still in the ground, is at $3.50 a bushel. Soybeans now, production there forecast at a record high, 3.2 billion bushels, up 8% from last year. Based on August 1 conditions, again, yields expected to average 41.7 bushels the acre for beans. That's up 2.1 bushels from last year. If realized, it would tie for the fourth largest yield on record. Soybean and product prices are all increased this month. The U.S. season's average soybean price for 2009 and 10 is projected at $8.40 to $10.40 on a range. That's up 10 cents on both ends.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products, including Asgro's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Time to check in on the agricultural futures markets. Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, joins us. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
You want to give the USDA a grade for this morning's reports?
Oh, a C minus.
What did you not like?
Well, if you'd have tape recorded my customers, there was some yelling and shouting, and I feel a little bit like poor old Arlen Specter, a senator from Pennsylvania, when they criticized the health care bill at town meetings. I think the one thing that surprised everybody was, for example, let's just go in our own backyard and had more corn than we did last year, and we had less soybeans than we had last year, just in the state of Illinois. So, you know, there's examples. And then, Indiana, we had more corn planted and we had more beans. And we did see some things that jumped out at us like that. Hey, let's go on with what the real world is, and we'll be guessing that acreage probably in the October report. The big factor is that the commodity funds jumped in there and did do a lot of spreading in corn and soybeans. They did a lot of spreading in Kansas City wheat versus Minneapolis wheat. My private weather forecaster called me at 10 o'clock and said, hey, it is a wetter forecast for early next week. He's looking at a half to maybe a three-quarters of an inch rain the middle part of next week. Our farmers here in Illinois would like a nice drink of water from Rockford to Cairo, and it looks like it's going to happen. There's supposedly commodity funds caught with bean oil versus meal, and, of course, there was this tremendous soybean corn spreading that took place today. The big factor is the corn shorts are worried about frost and also worried about dry weather. The big factor here is the government did increase a lot of demand in a lot of areas with cheap corn.
Yeah, they did, and they did write a note in their programming today that said they increased the feed and residual use, but really didn't know where all that was going. It was it was a funny little note.
Historically, that's one of the creativity things that they do, and we do know from past experience. The Chinese bought a lot of pork and poultry products from the U.S., and they are probably raising a lot of hogs themselves and basically weaning away from U.S. pork. And as a result of this, this has caught the pork industry, you know, flat-footed and caused some real disaster economic situation to them. And, of course, they're going to struggle probably for years to come because of their overexpansion and pork production for export. Obviously the USDA didn't warn them. A lot of the feed grain people didn't warn them, but, it's a major blow to the livestock industry. Hopefully in time they will bounce back.
Well, they've got awfully low prices, and despite the fact that they have been cutting their herds, their efficiency has gotten so much better as the cuts have gone on, they're still, in the pork industry, expected to raise just as much as they have in the past years.
Yeah, one of the things that we do notice is the poet, large ethanol people are basically saying that, look, if you want cellulosic ethanol to come on board, you need to increase the blends. There's some high-level people that basically said, this cheap corn has got to go someplace, and the government did increase ethanol demand as well. So, they're pushing exports, industrial usage, and also livestock. So that was one excuse they used for short covering today in corn.
Anything else to add before I let you go?
Have a profitable day.
You too, Paul. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on this Wednesday afternoon. In just a few moments, we'll hear from Daryl Good, University of Illinois Extension Economist.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
USDA released its crop production and WASDE reports for August. It's its first estimate, real estimate, of what the crop will look like for corn and soybeans in the United States, and it's as a bin buster. What did you find in it?
Well, it really did. For corn, yield potential placed at 159.5. That would be second behind the record 2004 yield. And frankly, I think a lot of people think if we avoid any real disasters here, as the growing season winds up, that the yield could turn out to be a bit higher, so that 12.76 billion bushel crop, I think there is some thinking that could creep up towards the 13 billion bushel level again, close to the 2007 record, with a lot fewer acres than we had in 2007. I think the acreage number in the report was a bit of a surprise to the market. The market had convinced itself that the increase in corn acres reported in June actually didn't get planted, and we would see the number come down in this report. As far as I can tell, USDA didn't change their estimate of planted acres. The estimate of harvested for grain came down only 100,000 acres. So USDA, I think, kind of captured the effect of that, saying lower prices, now looking at maybe $3.50 average price for the year, will trigger perhaps some higher consumption of corn, feed exports, and ethanol use, so that we don't see a huge buildup in inventory at the present crop estimate, only because, again, lower prices encourage more consumption. If that production number gets bigger, we will see the stock forecast increase, I think.
Now, what did it show as far as ending stocks and the look at where that was going to be used? Did it change much?
It changed quite a bit. USDA, I think, raised their feed use by 100 million bushels and really said, we don't think that's going to be fed. We think that's kind of residual use that's associated with a large crop, that there's unexplained use. They did raise export projection by 150 million bushels. And raised their projection of ethanol use of corn by 100 million bushels for the year ahead. Again, all because they think lower corn prices will make consumption more attractive. not so much that there's what we would think of as an increase in demand. It's more a movement along the demand curve as lower prices encourage more consumption. So, looking at year-ending stocks of, 1.6 billion bushels. So that number in of itself is not a scary number, but when
it's
you think about
this year.
It's kind of what we have this year, but it's kind of how do you get there? You get there only because we're encouraging more consumption.
Right. And then so we have a number from USDA that did not change on acreage, which kind of surprised the marketplace. And on the flip side, we've got a big soybean crop, according to USDA, that's going to be harvested this fall.
The estimate of planted acres of soybeans went up 250,000 acres from June. The estimate of harvested acres went up 220,000. I think that was a bit of a surprise. Although USDA is still looking at fairly modest yield potential on this year's crop, 41.7 bushels, reflecting some, I think, lower yield potential at this point in the eastern Corn Belt. So we'll see where that number comes out, but it does result in a production estimate of about 3.2 billion. The market probably was looking for a little bit larger number than that because they were thinking higher yield potential. So again, this is the first brush, and we know that history suggests that yield estimates can change quite a bit from the August number, depending on how the growing season ends up.
Yeah, maybe we better go back to corn very quickly on the yield estimate because we haven't talked about that yield number. They raised that about 5.5 bushel. So they're up at 159.5 nationwide
right
now.
Right. And, of course, we need to keep in mind that to this point, the yield estimate that's been used is basically a trend yield number. So this is the first really look at an objective measure of yield potential based on farmer survey and USDA observation of field conditions. So, again, it kind of reflects what we thought based on the kind of July weather we had. The current crop condition ratings all point to a fairly high corn yield this year.
In your estimation, is it likely that a big corn crop will get bigger and then less likely that a big soybean crop will get bigger? It seems like the soybean crop might be still at risk as late as much of it is.
No, good point. I think there is some significant history that suggests that big crops, in fact, do get bigger, that there is some smoothing of the yield estimates by USDA. They argue that that's not the case, but I think what happens is in good growing season years that good conditions continue right through August and into September, so that it does add to yield potential, so that if August and September weather is favorable, we would expect that perhaps that yield estimate will increase. And, you know, perhaps significantly, even from a fairly high starting point.
Yeah, a fairly high starting point. You and I were looking at some of the numbers that came out from USDA's lockup and their objective yields, grain weight and ears per acre. They have a population in terms of ears per acre at probably 1,000 better than anything we've seen in the last, 5 or 6 years, and the second highest ear weight at this point, too.
Right.
But it could still get bigger.
Certainly the ear weight is yet to be determined in a lot of cases, and if we have a favorable August, first half of September, those ear weights, we would think, could get a little heavier. And certainly the increase in plant population is something that's been happening over time, and I think is a significant contributor to the trend increase in corn yields that we've been observing over time. We have to have something that keeps that yield going up at 2 bushels per acre per year. And technology and I think population are major contributing factors to that.
All right. Now farmers will get mad if I don't ask, what do you think we're going to do with marketing this crop? And maybe we should start with soybeans, because we're at a level that at this point on the day of the release is well above what USDA says the average cash price for the year is going to be.
Right. USDA is saying their midpoint is $9.40. I mean, we can sell soybeans close to $10, I think, out of the field. There's not much of a carry in the market. So the market is basically saying, you know, $10 beans is what is being offered right now. Again, that would be at the high end of the USDA's projected range for the year. Suggest that we should have some beans sold, I think. But as you mentioned, we still haven't quite got this crop in the bin yet. And if we would see some adverse weather, early frost, that type of thing, that would catch this late crop, that could really change the balance sheet very quickly on soybeans. So I think we still have to be a little bit cautious on how aggressive we are marketing. The balance sheet continues to look fairly tight for next year, and we'll see how South America gets along. But $10 harvest delivery beans, got to have some sold, I think.
And then there are two risk management tools to talk about, I think, with corn. One of them we talked about earlier this week with Gary Schnitke. Sign up for the Acre program. This probably says, hey, if you didn't sign up for the Acre program, sign up for the Acre program on corn, on your corn acres at a minimum, I suppose, if they're all in one farm unit. And then what do we do about pricing corn?
Well, I think your first observation is probably correct on the Acre program. Now, it looks like the state average yield is going to be high enough that in and of itself probably would not trigger an Acre payment in 2009-10 marketing year. But if we're at these lower price levels that the USDA is projecting, that's what would trigger a Acre payment, and potentially could be a large payment. The frustration about that program is you basically have to wait a year to know what the price is, and folks will be monitoring that closely as we move through the year. as we get into the first 3 or 4 months of the marketing year, with marketing traditionally pretty heavily weighted to the front end of the marketing year, we'll have a pretty good indication of what that weighted average price is going to be. But it does say that in that program is probably the place to be for a lot of producers this year. I know that some farmers that have FSA farm numbers that this year may be 100% soybeans maybe are not so attracted to the acre program and might opt out on those farms. In terms of marketing corn, I think obviously we still have a little bit of protection from the crop revenue insurance, but we're running out of time on that. That price will be established here in a couple months. I think, you know, farmers probably can afford at this point not to be real aggressive on marketing corn. If two things, if you have a crop revenue insurance program in place, it looks like there's going to be a payment on that. And if you're in the acre program, looks like there could be a payment on that as well. That's going to offset some of the sting of these lower corn prices and maybe give the market a little chance for a post-harvest recovery this year if we do see these bigger usage numbers come in. You know, the real threat, the thing you have to be concerned about short-term is if this production number does get a lot bigger, we're going to see some continued weakness in the corn market. So you say prices are low, but could get a little weaker here going into the harvest period.
Daryl, thanks much.
Thank you, Todd.
Daryl Good, University of Illinois, Ag Economist. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support comes from the Westchester Group in Champaign, an agricultural asset management firm specializing in the acquisition, management, and disposition of agricultural investments for institutional, corporate, and individual clients. Information at 800-607-6888 or at westchester-group.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. On the line with us to take up the cash grain market is Matt Blaisdell of the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Been a while since we've talked. How's cash grain reacting today?
You know, here in the last week, we've seen quite a bit of corn work its way out of the woodwork and out of the producer's hands here. I'd say we're now probably getting close to where only we have less than 10% of the production still left in the producer's hands here going into the middle of August now.
When it was gone last week, was that because you had good cash basis last week? Were the bids strong?
The bids were strong. You know, most processors here in Indiana have been running anywhere from high teens to even low 20s over here, and we're starting to see that fade. Climbers here has faded a nickel in the last since Monday, I guess, so in the last 3 days, and starting to feel like even in eastern Indiana, where we have a little more concentration of methanol plants, that they are starting to get at least their August needs met, and maybe we'll see another basis until September, but at least here in the next 2 or 3 weeks, we might be a little quieter.
Your bids for the day?
Yeah, here at Climbers, we end the day at 3:46, and Delphi beans at 11:24.
Thanks much.
Thank you.
That's Matt Blaisdell. He's with the Andersons, based at their Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. One quick note, Ag Day right here on campus, Agronomy Day that is tomorrow morning, starts at 7 a.m. I'll be dispatching the wagons into the field from then until about noon. It takes an hour to go around. There are 4 or 5 of those to do, so arrive early just south of the Assembly Hall. Back in 2 minutes.
It's National Toasted Almond Bar Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1759, Thomas Andrew Knight was born. A British horticulturalist, he initiated the field of fruit breeding, and he investigated the use of greenhouses, plant nutrition, fertilization, and pest control. In 1812, Ephraim Ball was born. An American inventor, he was responsible for creation and manufacture of the Ball's Blue Plow. He also patented what was the first widely successful two-wheel flexible bar mower. In 1851, Isaac Singer was granted a patent for the first sewing machine with a double rocking treadle. In 1948, Harry Beardsley died. He invented stainless steel in 1912. the discovery of the steel, chromium, and nickel alloy revolutionized the cutlery industry. The added metals produced a surface much more rust-resistant than steel alone. And in 2004, Anthony John Clark died, an English molecular biologist. He was a founder of applying molecular technology to farm animals. In 1990, he was successful in producing a sheep giving milk with human proteins. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Listening to the Closing Mark Report on a Wednesday afternoon from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. Time now to check the agricultural weather forecast. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City is with us this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
We'll take up the immediate forecast. It is, I must say it, lovely here in the Middle West right now.
Well, you know what? This summer's really been pretty good in a big part of the country. I know that we've had a lot of worry, a lot of concern from a crop perspective, but, you know, it comes down to human living. I think it's been pretty darn nice this summer, at least over my way it has, and it's really going to finish out in a favorable way. We keep talking about it getting hot and dry, but it turns right around and gets wet and cool again, and you couldn't ask for a better deal for a lot of places. The forecast does not really offer a tremendous amount of change here. The eastern part of the Corn Belt will see a period of drier weather coming up that will last on into the early part of next week, and our temperatures will be seasonable to slightly warmer than normal, and we'll see a quicker rate of drying across the region. But I don't think we're going to walk ourselves into any kind of a big problem, because it looks like it's going to rain at least a little bit next week, about midweek next week, and that should help to restore some favorable topsoil moisture for a little while longer.
Delayed planting, below normal temperatures, slowed corn emergence and development. How far behind in GDDs are we?
Well, we are quite a ways behind. Actually, I've got only old data in my head, so I'm not going to give you a specific number. But we are definitely behind in our development. Some areas it's 2 weeks, and in other areas it's even further than that. But we have done some favorable catching up here recently. And one of the interesting things about crops is that they're smart. And you get into the late season when the sun's height in the sky is starting to change and day lengths are starting to shorten, they will accelerate their drying and their maturation rates if we can manage to get some warm and dry conditions to occur. It can happen pretty quickly, and I think most of the producers out there would agree with that. And so with that said, if we can get the warm, dry bias to evolve for a little while, I think we can really catch up a little bit in these next couple of weeks. At the moment, we do have a cool air mass coming on for next week that will interrupt that process, but it's not exceptionally cold at this point. We will definitely see temperatures fall below average for a brief period of time, and if we can get these tropical cyclones to come up along the Atlantic coast frequently enough in the end of August, early September, we can actually build a nice high-pressure ridge over the middle of the country and perpetuate a warmer bias that would actually allow us to maybe make some headway against the situation.
When you and I last talked 2 weeks ago today, we were discussing analogous years to this one. 1965 popped to mind. There was an early frost at that time. It's a long ways out. You're talking about warmer weather that first week of September, maybe. What do you see past that?
Well, I do think that we're going to also oscillate back and forth between warm and cool weather, and there will be some coolness coming on probably at the end of August into early September for the Canadian prairie, and probably won't get very far into the U.S., but then we'll probably go into another period of maybe of a 10-day stretch of time where we'll warm up again, and then we'll bring on yet another cool air mass. So I'm thinking sometime around the middle part of September, the second into the third week, we'll probably see a threat in the upper parts of the Midwest and the northern plains. And then sometime at the end of September, you know, right around the 1st of October, would be the time that we would be concerned about the heart of the Midwest.
Drew, thanks so much.
Hey, have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City, Missouri. I'm Todd Gleason. That's today's Closing Market Report.